Hey everyone, welcome back to Hysteria Radio. I'm your host, Joe Fusaro, and today we have a couple of firsts for a guest here, and I know it's season one, so every week it feels like we have a first, but we have our first science fiction writer on the show today, and we also have our first state representative, so I'm very happy to introduce everybody to Mike Schlossberg.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I'm not used to being the first on a program. I'll take it.
Well, like I said, it's season one. We have a lot of firsts, but
I got you. That's a good thing.
I'm excited to talk to you about congratulations on your new book, Redemption.
Thank you. I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's been a really wonderful experience so far.
I saw that it's actually doing really well right now. The teens with depression and mental health condition section.
It's the number one new release.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congratulations on
Thank
that.
You.
And for writing a book for teens too, because, from what I see, they're the ones that, really need this conversation open to them.
Yeah. Yeah, there has been such a spike in mental illness among teenagers. It's really disturbing. And it's something that as a society, we've got to come better to grips with, because it's going to be a problem that touches each and every one of us.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you give us a little bit of your history? When did you start to notice, something wasn't right with mental health, or when did you start struggling at all?
In retrospect, probably from the time I was a little kid on, I was always that really sensitive kid, the one that got really upset for no apparent reason, or at least disproportionately upset, the one who was always really wound tight and really, really anxious. It bothered me, sure, even as a kid, but I didn't really realize something was wrong because I was still able to function. No matter how upset I got, I did well in school. I was totally a type A personality. And I was somebody that was always relatively successful. Now, for me as a teenager, when that changed was when I was hit college, which, as I found out years later, is relatively common. Among people who have some sort of mental illness, 75% will have that mental illness hit between the ages of or under 24 years old or younger. And 25% of those people will have the mental illness hit when they're 18 to 24. And that was definitely me. When I got to college, is when I really started struggling. The anxiety and the depression became out of control. I didn't want to live. I was so afraid all the time. I missed home so badly. And that's a relatively common experience for a new college person. You're in a brand new environment. You don't know everything that you've ever known. All of your familiar comforts are completely gone, and you're just afraid. And that was definitely the case for me.
Yeah. I can completely relate because, like you said, I noticed that there was something not right. I maybe had like some ADHD and depression tendencies in high school that I kept putting it to the side. I was like, you know what, when I get to college, I'll get better. I kind of had that attitude. And within a couple months into college, I was diagnosed with depression, yep. ADHD, anxiety. And it's like, everything hit me at once at age 18.
Same exact thing, and totally common thing.
Yeah. And did you start getting help right away, or is it something that you lived with
and
you tried to get over on your own?
No, when I hit college, when I started losing the ability to really function, when the sadness became so overwhelming that it got scary, I knew I needed help. And I was lucky. I had a supportive family, and the friends I had at college and at home were like, okay, you got to do something about this. And I went to Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is where I still live and represent now. And I had a wonderful counseling center there. The counseling center helped get me through a lot of my toughest moments. But when the anxiety became more severe and the depression ultimately didn't abate, the counselor said, I think you need to have a longer conversation. And that's when I saw a psychiatrist and started medication. I was 18 then as well, and it's medication that I take to this day.
Wow. Good for you for getting on a program right away, because I know a lot of people that age resist it and think it's either going to figure it out on its own, or they'll figure it out, which sometimes I think is worse, because now with the internet, people, take to researching their own illness.
Uh-huh. Or they try to Dr. Phil it. Just get over it.
So did you always write, or is this something that you just started doing a few years ago?
I wrote from the time I was a little kid, like sixth grade on, actually. I remember starting to write in the sixth grade class and being like, this is fun. I really like this. I actually did. So I've always been really, really active on social media. And for folks who are listening at home, you can shoot me a note at Mike Schlossberg. That's my Twitter handle, and same on Facebook. But as a politician, I watched in horror as many politicians really ruined their careers on social media. And yes. I wrote a nonfiction book back in 2014 called Tweets and Consequences, which had examples of politicians ruining their lives on social media.
I saw that when I was looking at your other book, I was looking at Redemption. I saw Tweets and Consequences. I was like, I have to ask you about that because
everything I said. Everything I said was wrong. President of the United States does it on a daily basis.
I was going to say, in 2015, could you have predicted what's going on today? Like with people, not just politics, like, you know, the guy from the NBA lost his job this week because supposedly a family member was tweeting about players and stuff going on in the front office. And it's just like, it's unbelievable on the fake accounts and everything. I mean, in 2015, you probably thought it was bad, but did you have any idea that it was going to get like this?
I never would have imagined that Twitter and Facebook would have swung a presidential election in the way that they did. And not like, if you had said to me Twitter and Facebook would swing presidential election, they would have said, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you use it well, smart advertising, blah, blah, blah. No, it's by somebody doing the exact opposite of what you tell them to do on a daily basis. It's for some reason, and now just to be clear, I'm a pretty liberal Democrat, but Donald Trump gets a pass at everything he does, and all the terrible, god-awful, atrocious things he says somehow make him more powerful. I don't understand it. And it's, you know, you want to talk about depression, that in and of itself is very depressing.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, you know, our words have power, and, it's amazing. And I don't know, because I don't even know where to go with that.
There is nowhere to go. This is politician Mike, not writer Mike, coming out.
Right.
But I think his power speaks to a sickness in our society. One who says and does things like that should be tolerated in a civil society. But for him, it seems to grow his power, and that's a hard pill to swallow.
Politics aside, you know, the same people that want people, you know, the politicians to be real, apparently right now, are the same people that are like hold athletes and musicians up to this standard where they can't say anything wrong because my kids are watching and listening. Well, it's the same with politics. You know, if you're a public figure, you're a public figure. And if you're going to hold athletes to that standard, you should hold everybody to that standard. And there's a double standard issue going on right now. And I think
I will take a NFL player making a conscious decision to kneel to bring attention to an important social issue over the president of the United States going on Twitter and calling people sons of bitches any day.
Yeah.
Let's
get back to writer Mike. What point did you say with Redemption, I need to get this on paper? And actually, I'm kind of interested with science fiction. How did you get inspired to turn what happened to you into a science fiction novel? Because I've talked to a lot of people that want to tell their story, and like exactly how it happened, but I haven't talked to too many people that have turned it into, you know, like a science fiction story. I think that's interesting.
That part was unintentional, but as I've gotten closer to write, as the book has come out and I've spoken with more writers, I've come to realize that I actually unintentionally did something a little bit unique with talking about mental health from a sci-fi perspective. And I've been surprised at how few other people have tried it. The inspiration specifically for Redemption was, now I've gone, like most people with some sort of mental health challenge, I've gone up and down throughout my life. There have been good days. There have been bad days. There have been stretches of months and years really where I thought maybe I can, you know, lower the dose of my medication and actually wean myself off. Maybe I don't need it anymore. And then there's been times where I've been incredibly depressed again. Redemption was born out of one of those times. I was having a really difficult time as a state rep at the time. We were in this budget disaster. I was just having some challenges with it. My wife had just trained. I'm lucky. I have a really wonderful and overwhelmingly supportive wife. I have two great kids, and my wife had just started a new school, and she was really struggling with it. It was a challenge. She's a teacher. I'm sorry, I should have said that. She's a teacher, and she was having a lot of challenges at work. And the combination of the two really threw me for a loop. And I re-upped my medication. I got back into therapy, and it was helping. But I said to myself, I need to do something for myself. And I thought of writing again. I thought, you know, I already did the fiction book or the nonfiction book. I want to try some fiction. I enjoyed that when it was younger, but I liked it. And as I was trying to think of something to write about, I remember this kernel of a plot that I'd had when I, plus it must have been 20 years ago from that point, about a bunch of kids getting stuck on a spaceship for, they don't know why, something. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And as I remember that plot and I began to flesh it out, I had started talking about my own mental illnesses publicly. My inspiration for that and what sort of made me the mental health guy in the legislature was the suicide of Robin Williams and some of the public response of, boy, he should have just prayed harder. It was the specific impetus for me coming out, so to speak, was a Facebook status that some moron put up. Oh, so sad he killed himself. He just needed more faith in Jesus. No. That's not a thing, sir. That's not how that works. Which is so funny. My whole life changed because of Facebook status. But so I had really become passionate about mental health and the stigma that surrounds mental illness. So as I was remembered this plot, and I was like, you know, I could expand upon that, kind of make it a teen dystopia. Oh, I like that, but I want to do mental illness. And so I had the main character suffer from anxiety and depression issues. I'm certainly, you know, inspired by my own story. And that's how Redemption was born.
That's amazing. And why don't you give a brief description of what it's about for our listeners?
Sure. Redemption is about 20 kids who want, and I don't want to get too into the plot, but 20 kids who wind up on a spaceship, ages 16 to 20, who wind up on a spaceship, and they don't know why. They are not, the main character is from this present time period. He wakes up and he's on the spaceship, and he has absolutely no idea why. They talk, the first chapter of them being attacked by an unknown alien ship, and they have to fly the ship, and they all seem to kind of know what they're doing at this one specific section. As the book evolves, they find out that they've basically been pulled through time with the responsibility of saving the world from a deadly disease called SPADES that's circulating around the planet. And they have to basically fly around the galaxy and assemble the pieces of this of a cure for this disease, all while avoiding aliens who are attacking them and surviving. And in the shadow of this, the main character has major depression and anxiety issues, despite the fact that he's the captain of the ship and he has to struggle to control them and to build relationships, friendly and not so friendly, with his fellow crew members.
That's interesting. I could tell you, I'm diagnosed with bipolar 1, and in 2008, I kind of felt like that. To tell you the truth, Well, that and that I was in this world where, you know, I contracted this disease, and I, you know, didn't know how to get rid of it.
I get you.
that's why science fiction really. You know, baffles me in a good way. Because have you ever seen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
I have. Really interesting
movie. Jim Carrey. Yeah. And well, I saw that probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And it was like when I first started my recovery. And I was like, wow, I relate way too much to all these things that are happening. And like, it almost felt like, oh no, this isn't science fiction. It's like, this is really something that's happening. Since then, I've grown a little bit and gotten a little better and realized that it's not true. But that's why, you know, I think that my bipolar 1 manic days kind of felt like a whole science. Felt like a few years of science fiction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and I think the interesting thing, and as I wrote, what I really came to realize is science fiction can tell really human stories in really unique, non-cliche ways. And I mean, the best science fiction isn't just about space and aliens and technology. I think good science fiction is about people. And that's why this was such kind of an interesting challenge for me, to write a science fiction story about mental illness. And I was surprised at how few people took that angle.
Yeah, yeah. I often wonder when I see something that's science fiction, like is this author or is this producer, director trying to tell another story with it? Maybe you just had the courage to come out and say, like, this is about mental illness, and maybe these other people didn't. You know, that's
yeah.
I always wonder that too. But or maybe they're just extremely creative people. Like, I don't want to put other writers down. You know.
No. I understand. Everybody, and the truth is, everybody's got a different story to tell with that stuff. But I really have come to believe that the best science fiction has very little to do with aliens. It's about the story, whatever story specifically you're trying to tell.
Right. Was it painful or therapeutic for you to write this?
Therapeutic. It was that, and not only was it therapeutic, but it remains extremely therapeutic. I mean, as you could hear in my voice when we were talking about Donald Trump, I have a very frustrating job. I have a wonderful, amazing job. I wake up every day and I get to help people. And it's such a sense of joy when it's good.
Right.
When it's bad, you just, it's a nightmare sometimes. And, you know, being a Democrat right now is not always the easiest exercise, and not only because of politics, but because of the values I think that we're adhering to. And I will say that writing this book and having it has been deeply therapeutic, because it gives me another avenue to do some good. I've become really passionate about anti-stigma work, and I think this book tells a really good anti-stigma story.
Yeah, I think it's great that you're doing this. I think it's absolutely great.
No, thank you.
And to have a job in politics, I would think that, you know, because one thing that I've done as I've started feeling better is I've kind of put down like my argumentative side and my fighting side, because it doesn't help my health or my mental health. So I can't imagine the strength that you have to still be in a job where even when you do something right, you may be questioned. And I'm not saying that because you're a Democrat. Sure. I'm sure there's good Republicans, good Democrats. It doesn't.
There are.
I don't want to turn away our listeners. Yeah, exactly. So, but to have, I couldn't imagine having a job every day where even when I do the right thing, you know, people are still critiquing me and trying to tear me apart. So I give you a lot of credit for that. And for
that takes getting used to.
Yeah. And just for using your stage and your voice for the mental health community, especially the teens, I just think that that's amazing. And thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. That's something, you know, passing bills can be really hard under the best of circumstances. And, you know, being in the minority in the legislature, which we are, can be extremely difficult. But nobody can ever take your voice away from you. And I get to use my voice and my stage on an issue that I'm passionate about. And I view my writing as another avenue to do good in that regard.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Do you have any advice for someone, you know, that wants to tell their story, but maybe is having trouble finding the right word?
There's no such thing as the right words. You don't have to. Most of the time, writing from the heart is pretty good. I will say that, but you don't have to tell a story that's going to sell a million copies. I'm going to be really happy if I sell a few hundred copies of this book. But that almost wasn't the point. I wrote it to tell a story and, God willing, to touch some lives. And if that's something that you want to do, just start to write or paint or sing. There's so many, you know, nobody has to be a writer. There's a lot of different avenues to do good work.
And I love that you said that, because that's what this show is all about. I mean, whether you're a painter, photographer, writer, musician, you know, try and channel all that energy that you're putting into your fears into something that makes you feel a little bit better. And I know it's hard. And I know there's days where, you know, just getting out of bed or months where just getting out of bed is the hardest thing in the world. But, you know, like one thing a day I found is really all you need to do, so that when you go to bed at night, you know, you're not drowning in the pain anymore.
And hating yourself and feeling guilty and feeling like a lazy slug. Getting out of bed can be the hardest thing. I certainly understand that. I will say one of the most pleasant surprises of this entire experience has been the overwhelmingly positive reaction for when I came out. I came out with an op-ed in the Morning Call, which is my regional paper, after I saw this moronic Facebook status. And I don't want to say in a fit of rage, but I wrote it really pissed off and deciding that I had something important to say. So I wrote this op-ed, not really thinking too much about the ramifications on my political career. Or at least until, so I wrote it, I submitted it, I'd done op-ed before, the paper called me like, wow, this is really great, and we're going to run it tomorrow. I was like, oh, God, what have I done? Oh, no. And so I'm freaking out, and I'm calling my closest friends, my mentor, and all that. And my best friend happens to be a member of the legislature with me, and I still remember being on the phone with him. Like, have I lost my mind? Well, yes, Mike, you have, but you're still doing the right thing. Okay, ha ha ha. And him saying to me, you don't realize what this is going to do to your political career. This is going to change your career in a really dramatic way. And I started to think, have I really done something goofy here? Not only did I not, the response was so astonishingly, overwhelmingly positive. I literally started, the op-ed got picked up by a few papers in Pennsylvania. So I wound up running in like 6 or 7 different papers in the state. And I started getting random emails from people across the state, especially local, saying me too, saying thank you. I don't feel as alone anymore. I started having people approach me and saying, what do I do with myself here? And it wound up, to my own disbelief, becoming a net positive in my political career, overwhelmingly so, to the point that I use it on my campaign literature. Like, I actually use my depression and talking about it publicly as a reason people should vote for me. Like, it wound up being such a positive in my career. And I hope that people understand from my story that this is a good thing.
Yeah.
And you can and should talk about it.
Absolutely. And I think that you're not alone on that. I think everyone that I've had on so far had that same overwhelming fear, like people are never gonna look at me the same. And they're not.
Yep.
They're gonna look at you as better.
Yeah. But that's okay. It's gonna be good.
They're you know, because you're being honest, and there's really, you know, what's better than being honest?
Absolutely. Especially in this, in my universe, but
all right. So, I mean, that's amazing. Thank you very much for coming on the show. But before I
let you go, my pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Where can we find your work, or where can we find you? I know you mentioned earlier, but just let us know on your website and
absolutely. So MikeSchlossbergAuthor.com, and I have a blog on there as well, and I blog pretty regularly about mental health, depression, just personal experiences, public policy. You can find me on Facebook, Schlossberg, S-C-H-L-O-S-S-B-E-R-G. On the same thing on Twitter, it's Mike Schlossberg. Again, the book is called Redemption, and you can buy it right off of, you can buy it right off of my website or by going to Amazon.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Mike Schlossberg. You know, I recommend you guys check out his new book, Redemption. And if you want to go back and check out Tweets and Consequences, I think I'm going to have to check that one out too, because I'd like to see it. The calm before the storm. But
I'll take it.
Well, thank you very much. And you know, thanks for writing this book. And like I said, using your voice for the teens out there, because I think that's what we all need to be doing right now, is looking, you know, to help our next generation.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, listeners. And for Mental Health News Radio Network and Hysteria Radio, I'm your host, Joe Fusaro. Until next time, remember to keep the radio up, to keep the hysteria down.